Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And McCullers kicks and comes home. And the pitch swung on. Hit deep. Right field. And the Phillies are going to lead it.
Yeah, they are.
Bryce Harper has put the Phillies on top with a two-run home run over the out-of-town scoreboard. Simply amazing. Harper here at home has homered on back-to-back swings.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. We are at Stateside Live in South Philly for the Red October Rally. Joining us now, CEO and managing partner of the Philadelphia Phillies, John Middleton. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Spike. Nice to be here. Thanks to all the fans.
So, you know, CEO and managing partner, but also a fan. So
Fan first.
So heading into this series against the Dodgers, would you describe how you feel as nervous or excited?
What would you put nauseous on?
I think you...
Is that extreme nervousness?
Yeah.
I think so.
I think you're right there with us. Yeah. So I asked Dave Dombrowski this question when we had him on a couple of weeks ago, but I think it's appropriate for you as well. You know, everything that happens with the Phillies, you have to stamp and say yes. So you have a lot of control over what happens with the Phillies. But once the team hits the field, you have no control at all, right? They just have to win or lose.
Yeah, they perform or not.
Yeah. How emotionally, how is that for you to have so much control until a point and then the wins and losses are just completely out of your hands?
So a couple of things. One, Dave really has the control.
Sure.
I mean, do I approve things? Do we talk about everything? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I listen to Dave and say, well, okay, that's who you want to start your pitching. No, here's who you're going to start.
Right.
That's never happened. It never will happen. If it does, I should be removed from office. So Dave makes those calls. I'm involved. I'm informed. We just 10, 15 minutes ago finished a conversation about what was going to happen. We hope. We expect. But, you know, you get used to it. It's hard. This is my ninth postseason. It's difficult to let go and realize you have no power, no authority to do anything, no ability to influence anything. But you just have to, it's part of the job, and you have to get used to it and accept it. I remember talking to Ruben back like in 8 and 9 because he played, and he said, you know, it's so different being on this side and not being it. Because he said when you're playing, you have things you have to do to get ready for the game. I mean, you have certain rituals, you have warming up and things like that. So he said, you can think about how you can influence, get yourself ready, and then how you can influence the game. But up here, he said, you're totally out of control.
It makes me think of the scenes in Moneyball where Brad Pitt, who was playing Billy Bean during the games, would just go and lift weights to get rid of his anxiety.
Yeah, because you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
From 2012 to 22, we didn't have postseason baseball. And getting postseason baseball back here in 2022, I think for a lot of us, reminded us what Red October was like.
It's a pretty great run.
Yes, right? So when you're in it in 07 to 11, and you win a World Series and you go to two, sometimes you think that's going to last forever, and then it doesn't. But then you don't have it for a while, and then it comes back. And I know, at least for me, there is a greater appreciation for where the baseball team and the organization is at right now, that you try to enjoy it a little more. What's that like for you being in this position?
So, you know, I think what I find really exciting about where we are right now is that the mandate, when I was talking to Dave, and by the way, our conversation was, we had two conversations before I hired him. The first one was kind of for me to listen to him, why he was saying no to everybody, and my explaining to him why his reasons for no didn't apply, at least in my opinion, to us. And then the second conversation was after he kind of did some checking within baseball, was when we actually hired him. That was literally a 5 to maybe 7 minute conversation. And he asked me, he said, what do you want me to do? And I said, it's pretty simple. I want you to win now, and I want you to win later. So you got to figure out between trading everybody away or trading no one away where you are at any point in time to help maximize winning now and winning later. And what Dave has done is build a really, really good organization around him. I'm just so impressed with what he's done. And he's done that on his own without me, so I can compliment him without I'm not giving myself a compliment because I had nothing to do with it. He just hired these people, and they've done a great job. I mean, Brian Barber's done a terrific job with the draft, and Preston Mattingly, and now Luke Merton in the minor league development system. And we're really positioned well. I mean, we've got, we've traded some talent away in the last couple of years. I hated to lose the two guys this year we traded to Minnesota because they were both really promising people. But, we needed them. And, when you look down into the minor leagues, Dave felt that he could, he could replace them, that there were people coming up, and then in a year or two there would be some people who would replace them. And you can only do that with a really good organization. Pat Gillick told me, the second day he was on the job, that he said, really good organizations consistently put good teams on the field that consistently compete for the playoffs, often get in. And that's what Dave has done. He's built a really good organization that I think will keep us competitive for a long, long time. The goal is to not be 5 years and then bust.
Right.
And I think when you look down at who our players are in the minor league system, you can see talent coming up. And not everybody develops. And even there are lots of three hitters who hit 320 in AAA who hit 240 in the major leagues. So it's a huge jump. But I'm optimistic, and I'm really proud of Dave and his team for what they've done.
How hard is it to not be impatient in those sort of situations when, the team has been so close over the last few years, and that, I know ultimately you said it's Dave that makes those choices, but, you're always trying to balance, this year and the future. How difficult is it to find that right balance and to not get impatient?
Well, I think you have to remember, and it comes with experience, that you can push all the right buttons and have all the right players. And players, you can even, there's two things they can go. The players may not play as well as they should, and it happens. And you look at like the 76, 77, 78 team, and then you go out and get Pete Rose, and you think, they won the Eastern Division for 3 years, and they got Pete Rose, and what do? They went out and finished fourth in the division in 79. Now, they did win it in 80.
Yep.
But the point is, you go out and add players like that, and it doesn't necessarily mean, even if they perform, and Pete really performed well in 79, that you're going to win. But you also have, risks of injuries. You have, frankly, bad calls that are made that, maybe change an at-bat, and the at-bat changes an inning, and the inning changes the game, and the game changes the series. So, when you look at it and think about, do I push all my chips in the middle of the table? The experience tells you can do that, and you still aren't going to win.
Yep.
And look, I mean, I'm sure up in New York, they're kind of scratching their heads and saying, how does a team that goes to the NLCS last year and adds Juan Soto, and he plays really, really well, he's one of the, top four, five, six bats in baseball, and they don't make it. It happens. They have a lot of injuries to their pitching rotation that you just can't predict and you can't help. So you always have to be balanced, and I am impatient, and that's why I had no business talking to Dave and telling Dave what to do, because Dave is patient.
It really feels like...
You got to know your limitations.
Yeah, for sure. So it really feels different. Last year had another stretch run. It was like, I just hope they get in, to flip the switch, and they're fine. This year, I think people they cannot wait to get to the ballpark tomorrow. How much differently do you feel about this year's team versus last year's team at this time?
A lot, and that really has, I think, to do with two things. You touched on one. I mean, you look at the last, 4, 6, 8 weeks a year ago, and you look at the last couple of months with us, and it depends on where you want to draw or start the process. You can look at it post-All-Star game. You can look at it August, September. You can look at it kind of post-Zach Wheeler, being hurt. But, we had the best winning record in the National League after Zach Wheeler went down. I mean, think about that.
Crazy.
I mean, it's nuts. And so that's how good the team is, how deep it is, how resilient it is. And that's the other thing. I think this team is the toughest team I've seen since the 08 team, frankly, maybe 09 team. But it's just, I mean, they go up to Milwaukee and take two out of three there. They come down and they sweep the Mets in four. You know, and then they go out to L.A., and you don't have Zach, and you don't have Trey, and you don't have Alec, and you don't have Edmundo, and you don't have Jose. And they, by the way, we sat on the runway for 5.5 hours. We landed in L.A. at 4:40 Philadelphia time, got to the hotel at 5:40 Philadelphia time, went to bed at 6 o'clock, 6:15 Philadelphia time. And they get up with all those players missing, and they beat L.A. in L.A. And just to make, you know, they come back the next day and beat them again. And that's just, I don't know that there's another of the 28 teams in baseball that could go out to LA with those five players missing from their staff and take two out of three from LA. That's a tough team. And they won, they kept coming back. The games were back and forth, and they just kind of gutted them out at the end. That's a tough team, and I have not seen that quality at that level in prior teams in this run.
You don't get that done without having someone with a steady hand that could steer this whole thing.
Well, that would be Rob.
And that's where I'm going. Yeah. I think it's been his best year as a manager. No disrespect to what he's done prior, but...
Oh, I would agree. I mean, I don't know that he's going to get manager of the year, but in my opinion, when you look at the players that he had lost and stuff, you know, Bryce was injured. You know, he was out for like almost a month and came back and his right wrist was still sore and whatnot. He's done a spectacular job, I think, of keeping the team on an even keel, keeping them motivated, juggling the bullpen. I mean, you know, we've had troubles there. Jose was missing for half the season. Romano was up and down and then injured. But he's just kept plugging away and kept the team focused and playing at a consistently high level. It's the most consistent I've seen the Phillies play since the 11 team by far.
The goal, obviously, as you have stated, is to bring the trophy back here to win a World Series. Baseball is a weird sport in that the best team doesn't always win the World Series, and it's very hard to build a team much, much better than the other good teams. So, putting a World Series aside, how do you, at the end of the year, say to yourself whether this was a successful season or not?
I think if you don't win, you have to look at why you didn't win and try to then, because I think the answer to that question is really leads to the answer to your question. Mm-hmm. My father's standard that he started hammering into my head when I was 7 years old was that, you know, you should, no one has the right to expect you to do more than to try your very best, but you should always be giving your very best. And, you know, I think if you can look in the mirror and say, look, we did everything we could, there's a difference between not achieving your goals and failing. And I think you can not achieve your goals, but not have failed.
You guys have some pretty big free agents coming up. Kyle Schwarber, I don't know if you've heard of it. Ranger Suarez, JT Realmuto. All fan favorites.
Bader
as well. Yeah. Another fan favorite very quickly. When you're making those decisions in the offseason, and I mentioned fan favorites, does fan sentiment come into play at all? And if so, how much?
For the most part, it doesn't and it can't.
Right.
Because if you kind of, you might as well just open up a Google poll and just say, do we resign this guy or not, yes or no, and count the votes at the end of 24 hours or 48 hours. But more to the point is, if you do your job properly and you let somebody go and you bring somebody in and they perform, fans respect that, understand that, and they'll accept that person. I think actually Lizardo is a perfect example of that. I mean, we didn't get Crochet a year ago at the trade deadline. Got really, really close. Still can't believe they turned down our offer, but they did. Didn't get him in the offseason. And so Dave pivoted and brought in Lizardo, and he's pitched really, really well.
Yeah.
And not that people will say, well, we didn't need Crochet. We did, but we found somebody else.
Yep.
And that's what you have to do.
Was there a point when Kyle Schwarber just kept hitting the home runs when you were like,
okay, enough.
No, never.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, you just, the more home runs he hits, the better our chances are to win. And
yep.
At the end of the day, that's what it's about, winning. And you pay whatever price you have to pay.
I love your authenticity when it comes to being a fan. And it's relatable to the fans. And that seems to be very important to you. Obviously, you know, you got paying customers and that thing, that sort of thing. But it's more than that with you. And it's genuine. And I think fans recognize that. But having that relationship also seems to be important to you. Why is that important to you, that you seem to be out there able to be touched by your fans and by the people who pay for the tickets to come in?
Well, I guess the first thing is I like people. I mean, I like talking to people. I like being around people. You know, my grandmother's favorite adage was, you know better than anybody else, but you're second to none. It's another way of saying, you know, we're all equal. That, you know, you're no better than anybody else, but you're also, nobody else is better than you are.
Right.
And that's, you know, I've always learned that. I learned that from time as a little kid. In my work, prior work experiences, we had factories, we had hotels. I mean, it didn't matter what your job was. You're no better. You know, the guys who were first year who were sweeping the factory floors had the same health care benefits that my father and I had. They had the same bonus plan my father and I had. I mean, we just treated everybody equally, and it's been important. And in my life, it was important to my father, my grandfather, and I could see how people reacted to them growing up. And they liked them, and so I just tried to model myself after the two of them. And it means a lot to me. I love walking around the stands. Fans remind you what your job is and why it's important. It's easy if you hang out in your office. You sometimes can lose sight of that. But when you go out into the stadium or you're just walking around the streets of Philadelphia and they talk to you, you know, if you stop and take the time to talk to them, they'll remind you why, what I'm supposed to be doing, and why I'm supposed to be doing it, and it gets you excited when you see their excitement about the team, the players, you know, their aspirations. It feeds on itself, and it's really good for me.
Yeah, and off that, you know, just
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Like, we don't get to talk to you that often. Like, it's so refreshing hearing you talk. And we talk about how with this team, we want to win a title, not only for us. Like, obviously, fans want a title. But you want Bryce to have that moment.
Absolutely.
You want Bryce to have a parade down Broad Street. You want Zach Wheeler, everything he's gone through, to have a World Series title. But I think that you are also in there, too, where you've invested a lot in this team. And I think you've helped bring this team into the 21st century. And I think this city wants you to get a ring as well. And
that's nice.
And like, what does that mean to you? From like, what would winning a title mean to you?
So, I guess it was Bob Nightingale who asked me down. We were out in Arizona. A similar question. They asked, and I said, Bob, I said, in my professional life, what I'm doing right now is the single most important thing I've ever done. It's the most important challenge I've ever had. It would be the most rewarding accomplishment if we're able to do what I want to do. So that's what it means. It's kind of everything.
It's your legacy.
What's that?
It's your legacy.
Yeah, it is. And I said that to him. I said, you know, all the things I've done before, I said, it pales in comparison.
Yeah.
I said, if anybody, including my great-great-grandchildren, are going to remember me 50 or 100 years from now, it's going to be because of what I do here, not what I did before.
Amen. Amen.
You mentioned convincing Dave Dombrowski to come here, and you know, we all followed I remember the Bryce Harper situation. We were all following your plane going out to Las Vegas. So when you are trying to sell someone on not just the Phillies, but Philadelphia, when you're selling someone on that, whether it be Dave Dombrowski or Bryce Harper, What is that? Like, what is the sell on the organization? What is the sell on being here?
So I have always felt that when you're interviewing people, and the better the person you're interviewing, the more they're interviewing you too.
Right.
I'm selling myself, I'm selling the organization, but I really have to make, as if I'm the leader, they're looking at me and saying, why do I want to hitch my wagon to your star? What are you going to do that makes this a good decision for me to join you? And so that's what I do. And part of that is just being authentic and trying to be honest with them. I mean, you can't sugarcoat things. If there's problems, you got to tell them about them. And then you need to tell them how you think they can help you solve those problems. That's all I try to do, frankly.
You've been in this specific position with the Phillies since 2016, and the organization's in a really good spot right now. When you look back on this portion, what are you most proud of, and is there anything that you'd like to have back?
Well, I'm most proud of the way the organization has developed over the last 10 years. And that's both on the base, certainly on the baseball side. I talked about that earlier in the interview, but on the business side too. We are a much, much better business team than we were 10 years ago. And we've added great talent, just the way Dave's added it. And with people like Preston and Sam Fold, we've added it on the business side. And I'm proud of that because it's the organization that will carry you into the future. I mean, I'm not, neither Dave nor I can do everything, and we don't have any intentions of even trying to do that. So you have to work through other people, and you're only as strong as your weak links in business. And so that's what I'm really most proud of.
Well, before we let you go, the guy in the end there, Jack, I don't know how well you know Jack. Jack is the biggest Phillies fan I've ever met in my whole life. He's so tense during games, we can't even be near him. He hosts this giant Phillies podcast. He was part of the standing ovation for Trey. And I'm not asking. I'm just lobbying my support. I feel like one day Jack should throw out a first pitch.
I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think we can do that.
And he's got a good arm. We saw him strike out our morning show host like six times a few weeks ago. He can throw 80.
Seriously?
He might
throw 80?
Yeah, 78 and up.
I think he's 65.
Oh, come on, man.
Come
on, man. I used to sit 82 to 84. Everyone knows that.
He's got a big arm. So I'm just lobbying my support because I need to see Jack. And if he bounces it up there, we get to hold that over his head for the rest of his life.
And that's not a bad thing.
No.
Not a bad result.
So not only do we thank you for your time today, but, Ike mentioned, for a lot of years here, we didn't have this. At this part of the year, we weren't thinking about the Phillies anymore. Yeah, we were thinking about the Eagles. And now it's really nice to have to balance, our schedules around playoff baseball.
You get two playoff games sandwiched around a football game on Sunday.
Yep.
Oh, it's going to be a great weekend.
Yep. Yeah.
City's going to be tired.
Yeah. You got to remember, I was there back, obviously, in 80.
Yep.
I mean, in the spring, people are going to, playoff games with the Flyers and the Sixers and then coming over the vet. And then in the fall, they were coming to the vet and then leaving to go watch a football game later that day. I mean, it was spectacular. It was great.
Well, thank you. I know it takes a village and it is an entire organization, but it doesn't happen with you leading the charge. And we're so excited to not just cheer on the team, but to be Phillies fans and celebrate if they win and be mad as hell when they lose. But it's good to feel something.
Well, so we all feel really good come mid-November.
Yes, right. Would love that. Would love that.
That's what we're going for.
All right. Well, let's get another parade. We just had one, but we're due. Feel due. So,
all right.
Thank you so much. There he is, John Middleton.
Thank you, guys.
CEO and managing partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Appreciate your time, John. So, coming up on the show, we do have Ruben Amaro joins us in a bit. Then Tom McCarthy will join us at 4:00, and then Jesus Lizardo at some point later on in the show. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. We are at Stateside Live for the Red October Rally. Hey, tomorrow, the first 2015 guests get a free Stateside Vodka cocktail starting at 2 p.m. Ooh. In honor of Stateside being founded right here in Philly in 2015. With us now, Ruben Amaro. Thank you for joining us, Rube.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Every once in a while, you know, it's nice to come on to you guys.
Yeah, with you guys.
It's been a while.
Yeah, you don't hang out with us very much.
Yeah. You guys are a little later on in the day for me. You know?
You're in the JV show, too.
I do the JV show. That's correct. That's me.
This segment brought to you by Robin Ford, online at robinford.com. Where Robin, no, you're not. Where Robin Ford, Robin Ford, where cars and trucks are so cheap, cheap. Now, Rube, every Friday at 3:30, we do bring on Tornado Shapiro.
Ooh, I love Tornado.
Okay, for the weekend forecast. So as long as you're okay with that, we'll go to Tornado now.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Tornado.
Hey, fella. They get Ruben to scream at Middleton and demand that freaking trophy back. What a great party down the ballpark. Where else can you see the Blue Angels, the Green Berets, the Purple Helmets, the Black Panthers, and the exciting White all celebrating Red October? Music, please!
It's the game day forecast from the world's most accurate and famous meteorologist, Tornado Shapiro.
Right, bring those Dodgers on. You know, the last time the Dodgers were in town, Otani's parents were out in Ashburn Alley eating a ham and bean supper. Sitting out there with the rest of the Irish, it was O'Brien, O'Malley, O'Connor, O'Neill, O'Leary, O'Reilly, Otani, and oh, brother, there was fireworks after that meal.
I don't think Otani's Irish. I don't think he's Irish, Tornado.
Clear and cool tonight, low 51. Good sleeping. Yeah, Red October. We had a red-headed weather gal when I was over at Channel 48. Fanny Fire. Fanny was her name and her best asset. She even rolled out the red carpet for me. Come on.
Wow. Nailed it.
Well, back then, we didn't care if the carpet didn't match the drapes. Right, Ruben? Hello. That was the same night I got red lipstick on my Louisville Slugger.
All right. We might have to slow this one down. Yep.
Hey, we remember back at the Phillies block party back at 2022. It was me, Ike, Sarge Matthews, Jerry Royce, Vernon Odom, Ruben Amaro, Taco Amaro, and Cliff Lee. Right away, Ruben calls in Philippe Oman and makes some trade speech with Cliff Lee.
Ruben, is that true?
Yeah, very true. Okay. Very true. Absolutely.
Even Taco knows that it made no sense to trade Cliff Lee for Oman again. So we're all having a good time. Sarge grabs a stromboli and starts explaining how the jerk off the ball lets the pitcher jam you. And if it comes, it comes.
All right.
Sarge starts Cadillacing around with that big red fedora. But he drives a Ford Probe now, so it doesn't really work for him. You know, it's playoff time, and so you got to start looking out for some celebrities tomorrow. You never know, you could see a Miles Teller or an Eddie Munster. And you remember that one year they brought in the Octomom.
I do remember the Octomom.
She was promoting her new baseball movie, Eight Kids Out. Ike might have been in that one. Oh. And there's zero truth to the story that four of those kids look a lot like me. I did have a 50-50 shot. Partly cloudy, partly sunny tonight. Yeah, Dodger blue. He needed the money.
Okay. Dice Tornado.
Sunday, another beautiful day for the Birds, Broncos, Denver coming in. Last time I flew in from the Mile High City, I had just joined the Mile High Club. Yeah, it was a weather girl from KPOT Denver, the Weed. They called her Rocky Mountain Rachel. You should have seen her peak. Ender Valley. Hello.
Okay, all right. Could you just give us the forecast and get out of here?
Catch your red eyes.
You give her the forecast.
Another picture-perfect weekend. 50-50 shot of anticipation. Saturday high, sunny 80. First pitch 74, dripping down to 69 by the end of the game. Sunday, Eagles game day. Kickoff, 50-50 chance. They go 5-0. You heard it here first. Outro music, please. Tornado Shapiro.
All right, no outro music. That's it. Man. Tornado Shapiro. What do you think of that, Rube?
That was unique. He's unique. But he tells it like it is.
He does. He does. It like it all is. Of his stories are. Do you remember that? He told the story with you and Ike.
Yes. Yeah. No, I remember it very vividly. Vividly.
I have no recollection.
No, of course not. Would never.
So, Rube, it's the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Better to get the Dodgers now or the NLCS? What do you think?
I would rather have them in a seven-game series just because I think that these are the two best teams in baseball, and it would be much better to play, I think, to find out who really is the best team by going by seven. But, hey, these are the rules we play by, and I think it's going to be a heck of a series as two really, really good baseball teams. And like I said, I think it's it'll be great for the fans. I do hope that they put on a good show. And clearly, since I am a Phillies fan, born and raised, I'm hopeful that the Phillies prevail.
You know, it's funny. We were talking yesterday. I watched the two Dodgers-Reds games, and I came into the show yesterday just like, terrified. You know, I was so confident about the Phillies, and I had to watch the Dodgers for 2 days. Right. But then, I have some friends that live out in L.A., and I realized that Dodgers fans are also worried about the Phillies.
Yes, they are.
You know, and
they should be.
Yeah, and I think it gives a little context of it, right? We just look at that team and we think of our inadequacies as a team, but they know theirs, right? And they look at our team too.
Yeah, so. And I think most teams have some level of warts. I mean, not every team is perfect. There's no super teams necessarily. And I think as far as just talent for talent, and when you start looking at position by position, how even these teams are and how good they are comparatively, I think it's, you know, I have to believe that the way the Phillies have played the Dodgers over the last few years, that they've played them very, very well. I know it's different in the playoffs, but I think that the Phillies should feel very good about how they played them and how they basically, you know, curtailed some of their offense. Hopefully they can do it again this series.
It has to matter that they played well against them this year, right? Everybody knows they are the defending world champions. You look at that lineup and you say to yourself, man, how are you going to beat this team? But the Phillies have managed to do that, regardless of who was available, who wasn't.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Available. Both teams didn't have guys available. Fact of the matter is, you start this series, and the way the Dodgers played those two games, most people outside of here are already counting you out. But I think that's something this team can sort of use and benefit them as well.
I think that we just have to look at the first three guys in the lineup. Everybody says, well, you know, the Dodgers have Mookie Betts and Ohtani and Freddie Freeman. Well, the Phillies have Turner, Harper, and Schwarber. I mean, those are two, three great, great hitters. I mean, and you know, we see them every day. So you see some of the, you know, some of the inadequacies or what have you, and see some of the foibles of some of these players. But the reality of it is, those fans are probably just as scared our lineup as we would be of theirs. So they're talented. I think both teams are a little top heavy. I do believe that the Phillies have a lot more length in their lineup now compared to where they were in the beginning of the season. And I think that's where, if there was an X factor in this series, I think the X factor is that the guys from the fifth hitter on are way better than they were in 2022. They're way better than they were in 2024. And I think that that's going to be very difficult for a team to navigate.
Rube, like, is there a time with the team where you look at them and you say, it's the year? I feel like we've had that moment with this team a couple times, but really you don't know until the postseason starts how it's going to go. But does it feel like the year for this team?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, you know, We really struggle with the fact that last year they had such a great start to the season, and they basically played 500 baseball from, what, May 1st on. I mean, it was a 500. They just didn't play great baseball through the end of the year. Well, this year is different. You know, they started off okay, and they, you know, held their own, but then they really started playing very good baseball towards the end of the year. And that's sort of what you want, is to you know, play your best baseball later on in the season so that it carries the momentum. And I think the team that they have now, as far as just pure talent is concerned, and I thought that they actually had better talent than a lot of teams in the past, you know, postseasons. But I just feel like these guys are poised. They've been through it. They've been through the ups and downs. I just do believe that this is, as you know, as good a chance as any to win the World Series.
You know, you've been a player and you've been a coach and an executive, so you have a really good perspective on a lot of this. This one in particular on Rob Thompson and the not just the outfield platoon thing, but the Castellanos part of it, which is not easy, right? Not easy for Thompson, not easy for Castellanos, not easy for probably the other players that are taking his spot. How do you first of all, the dynamics that go into that? You know, if you're in Rob Thompson's shoes, how do you handle that? And then, you know, how do you think that it has worked out? How do you, looking forward and looking into this point, how has Thompson managed that?
I mean, it is super difficult. I mean, I honestly think about what Rob Thompson has gone through over the last several weeks and to have to make this move. But I mean, number one, I think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Number two, I think it was extraordinarily difficult when you have a player who literally has been signed to play every single day in right field and wants to play every single day in right field, to have to tell him, okay, guess what? You know, for the betterment of the team and for the best, you know, for us to be the best team we can be, you can't play every day. And that's a very difficult message to have to send. It's, you know, it could put, you know, your team in a tough position as far as the clubhouse is concerned. But I think that they handled it actually as well as you probably could have handled it. If I was Castellanos, I'd be pissed off.
Right.
And you want them to be upset about it. But the reality of it is, this is probably the best thing for the team. And that's what you got to do. It's time now in September and October to play your best players to help your team win. And it's not necessarily about making people happy anymore. It's about making sure that at the end of the day, we have our best chance to put a W on the board.
Well, the thing that is so interesting to me is you still need Castellanos, though. So
no doubt. You
have to find a way to do this. And there's no guarantee that you handle it any one way, you don't lose the guy, right? But you have to find a way to do it where he can still be a productive player. And to me, that is the biggest challenge. It's not hard to, if you don't need him anymore, to tell Castellanos he's not playing. But you do, right? I mean, he's going to be in there when lefties are up there.
Yes.
So it's not just about taking him off the field, but it's about getting the best out of him when he's on the field as well. That is the most interesting part of the challenge to me.
And it is probably the biggest part of the challenge, because you do need for him to be productive. And he's been productive. I mean, he's done a nice job of being able to work through this, of us, you know, unhappiness or what have you. But you know, that's just pride. I mean, like, you know this.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have pride in your craft. Like, I want to try to do my best as an athlete. I don't want to embarrass myself on the field. I want to do what I can to provide what is necessary to help this team. And ultimately, I believe that players get to a point where, you know what, I have to sort of swallow my pride, because the reality of it is I want to win a ring. This is something I don't have. And people go through their whole careers without wearing one of those. They can have millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, and you don't have a ring on your finger. And there are so many players who, at the end of the day, that they'll say to themselves, man, I wish I had one of those.
Yeah.
Imagine not having either one.
Yeah.
Like millions of dollars or the damn
ring. Yeah.
That's how you host on WIP.
That's a bad combo platter. But I think that becomes something that's very important as you get older in this game. And he's made his money. He's going to make his money. And I think he has to understand, and I believe that he does, that hey, this is the most important thing right now. This is a chance to really win a ring, and I got to swallow it.
Yeah. Pause. Listen,
we'll get into that later.
One of the brightest spots of this season, Rube, has been.
Cut that.
Yeah.
Oh, we will.
Don't worry. Yeah.
Out of the Mount Rushmore.
Has been Christopher Sanchez. And he's going to get a chance to start game one. So excited for him. What do you think that's going to be like for him tomorrow in front of this home crowd? I mean, he's basically assuming the role of Zach Wheeler as the ace of the staff and setting the tone for this series. What's that going to be like for him?
I mean, I've been fascinated by his overall development from the time that he got to the big leagues with this team and to where he is now. I mean, he couldn't hit a broadside of a barn when he first came in. He had always had an unbelievable arm, but he made himself one of the best pitchers in baseball by the work that he did, the dedication he had, and I couldn't be happier for a player. Because, number one, he's a great person.
Yeah.
He really wants to do well. I only hope that he can control his emotions. He had one emotional game when he pitched against the Mets where things didn't go well. You hope that doesn't rear its ugly head. But I think that he's grown from that, and he really bounced back well from that to finish off the season quite well. And, you know, I fully expect him to have a good, strong outing. And hopefully the defense supports him. They make the plays behind him because that's important as well. One mishap or somebody, does something dumb on the field or, something happens, you just don't know how that player will react. I just feel like this kid has grown in leaps and bounds, and I'm just super happy for him. And how many teams can say, okay, we lost our number one, but we still have another number one that we can put out there, and Christopher Sanchez is the guy.
Well, Rube, your whole thing's always been starting pitching. I mean, it's super, super important. Who would you be your game two starter?
So I got Suarez my game two starter, if he's healthy enough. I think because I think I like to separate some of the differences. I mean, you have some power out of Christopher Sanchez with his fastball. You have some power out of Lizardo with his fastball and his overall stuff. I like to mix it up with someone who has a little bit more finesse to his game, a little bit more pitchability to his game. And I like to try to mix things up, so that would be my move. But gladly, happily, I'm not the manager to have to make that decision. But I just think having the separation in those two guys and these three different types of pitchers, I think is the right thing to do. That's where I'm at.
I actually have a Ruben Amaro question to Ruben Amaro. This is actually about you because sometimes we'll talk about Ike's evolution as a host, and when he first started, it's harder to be in the media because you're so close to having played, right? You've been doing media for a while now.
And because of you.
Because of me.
Because of you. Yes. I must say that Spike was actually the guy that actually had me become, get on WIP. Otherwise,
yes.
He and Angelo, he was the reason. So you can blame him for being on
the last thing we need is for him to have someone else.
There's a long list.
That was my first meeting with WIP, with Spike and others.
It's a long list.
Add Rube to the list.
Yeah, it's a long list. But so where are you in... I said before, you were a player, you were a coach, you were a general manager, but now you're in a position where at times you have to be critical of all three of those things. I imagine the longer you do it, the easier it gets, but where are you in that whole evolution of being able to do that?
Yeah, so one of the difficult things is, as an ex-player and an ex-executive, is to be super critical. And I try to be... critical to the point where, listen, if I was the player or if I was the person making these decisions, I would also agree with what I would be saying. I mean, so I try to take a pretty objective approach on this with regard to having some sensitivity that there is some, there are some, different factors that are associated with, why someone makes a decision or why someone, happened to fail at that particular moment. So I try to be critical to the point where I understand that these are human beings. Not everybody makes, is perfect. These are not widgets. But at the same time, when someone makes a mistake and I'm on a call or I'm having a discussion, I mean, it sort of would strike to my own integrity if I did not point it out.
Right.
And I think that that's – I just try to be empathetic to that point. At the same time, just being objective about what's happening in the game.
Do you think this Philly season can end without a World Series and still call it a success?
I mean, I can because I can because I've sat in the seat. I know how difficult it is to win. I will say this, and people will not agree, but they can agree. The 2008 team was not the best, most talented team that these Phillies have ever had, and they won the World Series. They happened to be playing a much lesser team, a less experienced team. They played the best baseball at the right time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you being the best and most talented team makes you a World Series winner. What makes you a World Series winner is playing the best baseball at the right time against a team that makes more mistakes. And if you can try to create those mistakes in some way, shape, or form, then you have a pretty good chance of winning the World Series. But it's hard to win, man. It's so difficult to win. So I do think that while most folks think that this, if they lose the World Series or don't get to the World Series or do not win the World Series, that this is a failure, I see it totally differently. I think that this team has had a very good season. I would be disappointed if they get knocked out in this round, but I don't think that this is something that I would consider a failure unless they fail so miserably at their craft in this series that, you know, maybe you do. I mean, a lot of it depends on how they play this series.
Yeah, the hard thing for me is, especially in baseball, because the playoffs are so – there's such a small difference between the levels of the teams, is when to know that even if you made the playoffs, this isn't the right mix moving forward. That is the hard thing, you know, that must be for a general manager to look and say, nah, it ain't right, or let's just roll it out again and hope that we hit this time.
Yeah, I think that is the difficult thing. I always believed in making some sort of changes. I don't know if it's 10% or 15% of your personnel or what have you, but I always believed in making some changes because I think with change you have growth. But, you know, this was a team that, you know, while they didn't make a ton of changes, I mean, the fact that Lizardo, I mean, people, forget. Like, this was, like, a huge move. This guy won, what, 15 games?
Yes.
I mean,
struck out 215 guys.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that was a huge member. Well, he's running, you know, Dave Dombrowski's running it back. Well, I don't believe in that necessarily. I think a lot of the lineup they did, but also the players made some adjustments too. And so you have to hope that they grow a little bit. So I do believe that this is one of those seasons that is going to be sort of cathartic in that, if things don't go well or things do go well, you're going to see some change, some pretty significant change. You got a lot of free agents coming, and I think, you know, John Middleton put a lot of dollars and time and what have you into this ball club. But sometimes you do have to make some change.
All right, so coming up next, Tom McCarthy will join us as well.
T-Mac!
Also in the 4 o'clock hour, Jesus Lizardo will join us via phone.
Jesus!
We are at Stateside Live in South Philly for the Red October Rally. By the way, the Twitter question brought to you by Mark's Jewelers. Mark's wants to wish our team good luck this October. Experience the difference with showrooms in Montgomeryville and Mount Laurel. As the series gets closer, which are you feeling more, confident or nervous? 53%. Nervous. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
Hey.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.